Good afternoon. Today is Friday, February the 13th, 44th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, the lovely sweetheart, Ken Woods.
That's funny.
I know. It's no, that's kind of stretched that one pretty far, didn't I?
It certainly does, yeah.
Oh, jeez. So you guys were a little bit busy earlier this week.
We were. We had a structure fire, yeah.
Yeah. Anything keeping the tail end of the week busy?
I had a reported water rescue today. And
oh, cool. Reported.
Somebody
as contrasted to an unreported?
They did go in the water, and we didn't have to pull them out. They self-pulled themselves out. But
They self-pulled themselves out?
Yeah.
But that means they climbed out?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, but they did fall into the bay.
You see, you know, economy of words.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's you're a professional. I'm just an amateur here.
Yeah, I'm just writing the press releases, man. Oh, boy. Yeah. It promises to be yet another sterling show when we come back.
So. Don't go away.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon. KINS News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. I'm trying to, I think, stay away from anything related to 50 Shades of any color.
That's probably a good idea.
I think so, yeah.
Although there was a bulletin on our International Fire Service information that the London Fire Brigade has had an increase in handcuff and ring-related extrications.
Oh, extrications.
Yeah,
is that what
that came across today.
Really?
Right.
Well, that'll be a quote for Monday's news.
Yeah. There was additional part. I don't want to go into that. We'll stay away from that.
Involving extrication?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay. yeah. This is the insight that you only get on this show.
That's right. That's true. Where else can you find such a...
Okay, I think I just go with the W.C. Fields quote here and let her rip. Inflation has gone up over a dollar a quart. Oh, boy. Yeah, I would imagine you guys probably get, let's just say the brunt of some of the trends and some of the goofy things, whether it's Hollywood...
We do.
Or any, you know, it could be, I guess, in books and in magazines and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
These are the chapters that you don't publish at the end of your career.
Right. And sometimes that's it. You don't find out about them, that it is a trend, until after you get the call, you know. But, things you would never think of that we respond to out there. And
Do you guys have like a logbook somewhere or a journal of just the weird stuff and do it like each year?
No, it's written down in our call records, but we always tell each other we should write this stuff down and write a book, but none of us are ever bright enough to do it at the end of career time.
But the call record, though, is official, public, all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about the...
Yeah,
in the weird crap that you guys run into, you just kind of what?
In the patient care
doesn't show
report,
up.
Yeah. No, that's all HEPA protected, and you know that's not available publicly. So all the details of specific calls, particularly when it comes to medicals and you know a specific patient, that's all in there, but none of that gets out.
But no names or addresses.
Yeah,
or
none of
that
gets released exactly.
You know, it may make for interesting reading on your guys' website.
Well, yeah, that's
here's
true,
this would. Week's right. Weird item.
That's true, unless you're related or know the person some way. And,
You just have to keep it opaque enough to be able to.
Right.
Yeah, you know, this was not the call that we took at. Yeah, things like that to keep everybody young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So a couple of car crashes this week that made life a little interesting, huh? It's street lights, telephone poles, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we've had a couple telephone poles, Harris near the Hubbard Station there, downtown, 6th Street. Yeah, it's been several of them involving, you know, a number of power poles, and then the power in the neighborhood is knocked out for a significant period of time. We had one on 6th Street where the pole was sheared off, and a large portion of the pole was suspended in the air.
That's a metal?
No, it was a wooden pole. But, you know, those kind of things, not only do you have wires down, but you have a large piece of timber in the air, can cause some real concern and problems for people underneath.
Isn't it amazing how taut those lines are and how they can hold things in place?
It really is how much tension is on them. And, yes, a lot of times when you do shear off a pole, that, you know, the wires still remain up in the air, and a section of the pole can stay up in the air and be suspended just by the wires itself up there.
You ever tried, like, touching the bottom of the pole and
see if
it'll
move?
No, we
try to stay away from touching the
bottom. Well, I mean, if everything's all connected and stuff, just...
We don't like to be touching any of that stuff.
Okay.
We leave that for the PG&E guys.
Well, I figure the creosote might leave, you know, fingerprints or something.
Yeah, that's true, right.
See if it's... if it's really tight, or if it's just kind of there and...
Yeah, no, we try to just cordon off the area, keep people out of the
way. You guys aren't curious, are you?
No, I'm sorry.
No, the cops are the curious ones. Yeah. That's why they have the investigators.
We let them go in first, and they can figure that out, and we'll come and take care of them afterwards.
So what happened on Harrison, or Harris, rather? I drove by last night, and it kind of looked like a spear had been...
Yeah, we had a vehicle that was launched up there and hit the pole and shut off power to the neighborhood, to the station there. I wasn't on the call, but another one of those vehicles at rapid rates of speed hitting things that are not intended to be struck.
Is there a lot of speeding that goes on, Harris?
There is a fair amount out there, exactly. And, you know, in the morning it's not as bad, of course, because there's a lot more traffic. But nighttime, and we get people into the parking lot across from Redwood Acres doing a little speed exhibition, things like that. You do get excessive speed, and with it comes accidents.
That's not the motorcycle training guys.
No, that's different. Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Or your guys practicing on the truck.
Yeah, no, yeah. Not. We don't want our guys doing that either.
Right. Have you tried to max out the truck going around a corner?
No.
Do you have any idea how fast you can go in that thing?
Successfully negotiate
a turn?
Yeah, we don't want to max the thing out to try to find out.
Well, I understand, you know, skid marks
are within reason of, we exceed the speed limit by, you know, normally it's about 10 miles an hour. Those vehicles with the amount of water that's
10 miles an hour, that's all you go?
The bigger engines, a lot of times that's all we're doing in the city. You know,
really?
Because not only do you have, each of our engines carries 500 gallons of water, so just the weight ratio there, with all the other equipment, we carry a huge amount of equipment on our apparatus. So, you know, you get going too fast, you're not going to be able to stop at one of the lights when it changes on you or someone steps out in front of you. So we're moving, but we're trying to stay safe at all times and be really aware of what's going on around us, because as we've discussed before, you know, people are not paying attention a lot of the time. They're not watching out or listening for fire apparatus and emergency vehicles.
KINS News and Information Times, 319.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt Bay Fire Chief Ken Woods. Ken, the fire responses that you guys have been doing, I guess that says that your training is paying off.
Yeah.
In Eureka earlier this week, I mean,
right.
You got a chance to block a little bit of road traffic and, you know, do
right.
some of that
disrupt
kind of stuff.
A little traffic and save a building in the process. Yeah, and a block.
Yeah. Well, so what was that one all about?
That was a fire in an apartment that was a two-story structure, and the cause is still undetermined. But a heavy fire load, a lot of materials.
Oh, man, I got to give you your lines. The cause is still under investigation.
It's under investigation, undetermined. Right. We're still looking into it, in other words.
But, slow learners, or just takes a lot of time?
It takes a lot of time. A lot of material in the structure, a lot of items. And, you know, you have to look for the origin, where the fire started, and then try to determine from there the cause. So you're eliminating where was the power, you know, was there electrical, was there gas to the building to start with? If there was, what type of items then were in the area of origin of the fire. So you're clearing things away, you're systematically removing things.
If you see a lot of glass tubing, that's a clue for
you?
That
could be. Yeah. Could be a clue. You know, you'll check that weather report, see if there was any lightning that day, for instance. You can quickly eliminate things like that. But
is the investigation process as easy it appears in Hollywood?
Not at all. It is very difficult.
I would think that'd be really cool arson. To do that stuff.
Yeah, it's a very methodical, slow process, and particularly when you have a fire. You know, firefighters are great at coming in and breaking down doors, moving furniture, cutting holes in walls, ceilings,
destroying evidence. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we don't use those terms exactly, but.
Well, the fire investigators probably
it does,
do.
In our attempt to put the fire out rapidly and search for victims, a lot of evidence can be destroyed.
And doing the happy dance afterwards, too. You know, look at all these footprints here.
Yeah, a lot of big boot footprints, right. But it is a very difficult process. And particularly, you know, when things are burning and then it's dark, you can't see, you're in there fighting the fire, you're pushing stuff out of the way, you're trying to search for victims. After it's all over and you've torn down walls again, you've searched for hidden fire in various areas, you want to try to reconstruct what was in that room. So what was in this location? Was there a couch here? Where was the bed? Where was the lamp? You know, because it could end up across the room by the time the firefighters get in there and do a search. So you look for those things, and you want to look for patterns of really where the origin of the fire. Did it start in one place? Are there multiple locations?
Are the older buildings easier to determine or more difficult?
You know, it really depends on the circumstance of the fire itself. The older, you know, more structurally stout buildings, redwood construction, a lot of them, bigger timbers, are at times they burn slower, so you have more intact when there's a fire versus a lot of the new materials that are petrochemical products that burn real hot very quickly, and roof trusses, things like that, that are you know, lightweight, just held together by metal plates,
like
things
the
like
drop
that.
Ceilings, that
yeah,
kind of
that
stuff.
Fall apart very easily, and that, you know, you have a quicker collapse, quicker combustion of the materials in the room, and so it really depends on, again, how big the fire was, what materials were in there, and then the type of the structure.
So it's almost a different approach to the investigation then, depending on what type of structure it is.
It is, and then part of it is witness statements. You know, was there anybody inside? Is it a vacant building? Had there been problems? Had somebody threatened to burn the place down? Can be a good clue. You know, a number of things like that you want to look into and really investigate. And then if there is suspicion, then we'll take samples. You'll take samples of carpeting, flooring material, send those off to the lab, see if there's any kind of accelerant that was in those materials. And that takes a period of time to get those results back. So it's a complicated process, and it's very difficult to get convictions when it comes to arsons because, again, there's so many components and things that have been destroyed in the process that you're trying to reconstruct and really, you know, trace that tail back to where it started with the cause and the origin.
I'm wondering how much more challenging it is to prove arson versus stupid. Yeah, because there are, you know, there are those whoopses.
There are, and a lot of times the whoopses, in talking to victims or property owners, you can get that out of them eventually. They'll admit to the whoops side of it, as opposed to arson where people are just outright trying to cover up and hide something for, you know, maybe another motive or to cover up another crime, that type of thing.
I would think, of course, I've never done, but I would think that if you were going to try to burn something, whether it's an apartment or a house, there's not going to be one flashpoint. We're going to rig this baby, and it's going to have multiples, and it's going to be down before you guys show up.
Well, that depends on your
desire.
Desire and the mindset of the individual trying to do it, you know. And some people think of that, you know, that they're going to set this and they're going to do it in one location to try to cover up, to make it look like it was an accident, versus just going in and pouring gasoline all over the place, you know, and it takes off right away. And those are, you know, sometimes a little easier to trace back. All of a sudden, there's a building, and you know,
no footprint, no happy dances in the middle of it, though.
None of those, no.
KINS News and Information Times 3:30.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish-language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. Juan 790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, you guys also had the opportunity to bring out the big truck on a larger event in Fortuna on Main Street.
Right.
Explain a little bit how the MOU or JPA or whatever formal relationship that the fire departments have on something like that, because it seems to work so well in so many different locations, regardless of if it's Arcata having to go to Fortuna. Yeah. It still seems to work in a timely fashion.
It does. It's our mutual aid agreements that we have countywide, and it extends even statewide, and even California is really the model worldwide for the inner dependency and cooperation that the fire service has. But in the county, the majority of the fire agencies are dispatched through CAL FIRE in Fortuna. So when someone does need help, they may call for two additional engines, or in the case of the Fortuna fire, they called for our ladder truck. And we get the dispatch, and we just immediately respond because we know our neighbors need help, and there's going to be times when we need help, and the fire service is just so willing to come to each other's aid. And once you get there, it's pretty seamless. We're all using the same incident command system, so the same sort of systematic direction and mindset how we're going to attack the fire, and how your unit, when it gets there, is going to be plugged in and put to work. So it's pretty seamless, and it works very well. And of course, there's not of these huge career type fires that go on, fortunately, very often. But when they do, whether it was the one in Samoa a couple years ago, this one in Fortuna, fire agencies come together and they work very well at quickly coming together to try to mitigate the problem. And you know, the one in Fortuna was a huge fire, obviously, and a lot of those fire departments, Rio Del, Lolita, Ferndale, Fortuna, volunteer agencies for the most part. A lot of those firefighters there, it was their very first fire. But again, it doesn't make any difference whether it was our crews that came in that have more experience fighting fires. They can work with the less experienced ones. Everybody knows the same goals, same safety hazards, things to be aware of. And again, work very seamlessly, cooperatively to try to put the fire out as best they can. And in that case, it was a very difficult fire due to the type of construction they had.
How quick, isn't the right word, how challenging is it to go through the city and then get out on the highway, rolling, you know, bells and whistles and lights and sirens and the whole nine yards, as you're running your big boy truck? I mean, that's got to be, you can't practice that one.
No, you know, we don't respond normally out of our jurisdiction, the regular streets. So the fire engine is not built for the fire truck for, you know, speed record heading down the freeway.
Or merging even.
Yeah. It's actually, because of the speed of those apparatus, when we get on the freeway, we normally turn the lights off unless it's one of the smaller engines that can really make time and keep up with the traffic. But otherwise, you know, you're just going to get there when you're going to get there in the bigger apparatus. And it's,
you're not worried
be
about 5-minute response times and that kind
not.
Of stuff.
You try to get out of the station every time as quickly as you can, but you can only go so fast in those big apparatus. And, you know, Fortuna is, it's a ways down the road for us, and it's going to take time to get there. And that's why, with mutual aid, you want to make sure, as an incident commander, that you're calling early for additional resources. When you have a large fire, which they did down there, Fortuna did a great job of calling early for extra apparatus and getting in those extra departments that they needed. But it's, you don't want to get behind the eight ball, because the fire's not going to wait for somebody to get there.
So when you, were you on board?
I was not there. Bill Gillespie, our assistant.
I know Billy was
down.
And
Bill went. Yeah. And then our crew of four on the truck, which is our standard crew for that apparatus.
I'm wondering, is the way that Fortuna is laid out, you're coming in from the north. Okay, it's a 25.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're responding, and you see the flames.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and your rig can go, I know, at least 30.
Right.
Do you adhere to the speed limit? Or are you looking to get in there as quick as you can? And if it says 25, but you're blowing through at 35, hey, guys, we got our bells, we got our whistles, and this could be somebody's life.
Yeah, we're looking to get there as quickly as we can. But at the same time, to be very aware of when you come to an intersection and there's a stop sign, even with the lights and siren, you know, we can't just blow through it, especially with a vehicle that size, because if someone comes out, you're not going to be able to stop. So you're stopping at the stop sign, stop light, and then you roll through as quickly as you can from that point forward. But it's going to take time. Yeah, but again, if we get in an accident on the way there, we're not going to be able to help anybody.
Obviously, just reflecting, Reagan hasn't been in yet, so I'll ask him when he comes in. Mm-hmm. But at the four-way stop coming into town, as mm-hmm. everybody's coming into town that way,
right.
Did they have somebody posted there blocking the traffic so you guys didn't have to slow down? Or were you having to come to a full stop?
I think,
and then proceed, yeah. And
because
then
of the
get into the staging,
the morning time it was early in the morning, it wasn't an issue. But you know, that's why within the city of Eureka, we've now have the traffic preemption system that changes those traffic lights to green for us, so that we can maintain a speed with green lights all in our direction going forward down the road, so we don't have to come to a complete stop and we don't have to, you know, waste time then stopping and trying to get back up to speed. The light's green in our direction and we're moving through there.
Will you flip those a half block in advance, a block in advance? How early will you do that to be sure that nobody's being stupid?
It depends on the emitter itself. That is, there's a receiver on each of those signal lights, and then our vehicles put out a signal. So depending on the layout of the intersection itself, if there's a corner or if there's an angle, it's going to offset how close or how far. But normally it's going to be in the neighborhood of half a block down, where that's going to trigger and switch all those lights to red except for ours and our direction we're heading, and that one changes to green. It's going to hold it for a specific period of time so we can get through, and then it'll release and go back to its normal signal.
KINS News and Information Times, 342. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 345. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, a couple of other quick things. You said you had an interesting response earlier today.
We had a report of a water rescue down by England Marine, report of an individual who'd hit his head and gone into the water. We got down there, and the workers on the old Navy ship down there, an individual had fallen off the dock, hit his head on the way down. They were able to help him get out of the water. So when our units got there, he was conscious. He was up on the boat with a head injury, but he just fell off the dock and into the water down there and ended up transporting him to the hospital.
You're trying so hard to play it straight. He was seagull netting, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he was enjoying himself down there, I think, when he went over the dock. And
Are you surprised that there's not more of that, but that there isn't more that kind of simple water rescues with the bay, with the amount of tourists, with the activity that's you don't hear about that kind of stuff that much.
Yeah, those calls are really few and far between. I haven't thought about a lot, but I guess, you know, there's a propensity obviously for a lot more of those type of calls. I saw there was an article the other day about down on the peninsula in the Bay Area, more mud rescues where people had taken their boats into the bay where they get stranded on the mud. They try to walk then into the mud and they get stuck and they're sinking in the mud, and the fire department had to go out there numerous times. In fact, their calls had increased a couple 100% to rescue people that were stuck in the mud. So yeah, we're fortunate we don't have a lot of water rescue calls here, but when we do, they take a lot of resources because, you know, with the tides, with just putting one of our rescue swimmers in the water, we want to make sure we have backup to get them out if someone's fighting, if they've got, you know, current, wind, all those types of things.
But they go in with a big flipper fin, so at least they're displacing their weight instead of going in with...
Right. Right.
What are the things that the Eskimos have? The snowshoes.
Like snowshoes, yeah.
I would think that's what you would need just to spread it out.
Yeah, if you're on the mud, absolutely. Yeah. And we have rescue boards, look like surfboards on our apparatus that they can deploy as well. But yeah, I mean.
Or drop some plywood out, you know, just and say anything to disperse the
something
the
to
weight.
Distribute your weight out, right.
Okay, a really big piece of plywood.
You're very big. Right. We usually don't carry them big.
Yeah. Oh, fine. That would, and I'm looking at an air rescue. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I got me thinking about a helicopter here. Maybe next month.
Oh, gee. Measure Z started. At least they've had a meeting. What kind of sense do you have? How's that one going from the your representative's perspective? Any idea?
We're still very much advocating for 20% of those funds. We've done a survey now of all the fire agencies in the county, and what we're looking to do is to bring those fire agencies who don't meet minimum standards, who their protective clothing goes back to the 1980s, the 1970s. They don't even have air packs to go into structure fires. They don't have enough radios for individuals. We're looking at just having enough funds to bring those departments up to a very basic level, and that's going to be in the millions of dollars that we've already determined right off the bat. But, you know, those firefighters, the majority of them are volunteers, are giving of their time to help the community and doing it for nothing. And we really feel like the county should be able to support citizens who are willing to help their fellow citizens. And we're not asking for wages. We're not asking for anything fancy. We're asking for very basic equipment to support those volunteer departments out there. And again, get them the safety gear that they need to do their job. Because, you know, if you're in an emergency, you want help as quickly as possible, and you want people that are going to be equipped to rescue you.
I suppose it's challenging in the sparsely populated areas, which means lots of trees.
It is.
That you don't have the population base to be able to really justify or to warrant taxing.
Right.
And yet the need may even be more than what it is in some of the urban areas.
Yeah, a lot of these little, you know, fire departments, and again, there's 41 of them in the county that are what we call bake sale departments. They don't have a standard stream of tax revenue coming in. They're existing on bake sales and things. So the money to buy this equipment just isn't there for them.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Calm weekend, man.
You too.
Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug somebody else tomorrow.